Before beginning a brief comment, an introduction to the text you have before you from Cicero, who lived during the first century BC, I'd like to invite you to take a look at a text that is not on your book list, if you have access to it, and if you don't, it can be ordered and is well worth having in your library. And it's a book by C.S. Lewis called The Discarded Image. And in that book, he points out that this text, The Dream of Scipio by Cicero, is of incredible influential importance in the history of the Christian mystical tradition. All educated Christians in the Latin-speaking West read this text, meditated on it. Many commentaries were written on it. It was regarded as a reminder of the fact that the universe is a reflection of God's glory and His harmony, and also that we are obliged to make choices in this life that allow us in the next life to be drawn up into that glorious heaven which we see every time we contemplate the night sky or the heavens, the clouds above us. So dropping down from the top of this document to the next set of pictures, you'll find that unlike Plato, who told his story as a kind of out-of-body or after-death experience, Cicero creates his myth purely as a dream by the grandson of Scipio Africanus, who was one of the great generals of the Roman Republic. And in this dream, he's carried up above the sphere of the earth to a point where he sees and meets his grandfather and can look back down on the world. And dropping down now to the pictures of the galaxies that come below the picture of Scipio Africanus. It's a reminder of the fact that to look at the sky, to look at the stars in antiquity, was to look into the glories of God, and also, as he says, to be reminded that the earth is smaller than the starry spheres of heaven. We realize the insignificance of all earthly things when we look up into the heavens. The next set of pictures, just above chapter 17, are a diagram of what the universe was thought to be. And this was the model of the universe that remained active both in the Christian East and West until the revolution of Copernicus and of Galileo. The Earth was thought to be at the center of the universe. It was understood to be a sphere, not, as we may have learned in elementary school, thought by some people perhaps to be flat or shaped like a coin. That's not true. In antiquity, all educated people knew that the Earth was a sphere, but they believed that it was at the center of the universe, and that surrounding it were these spheres that were presided over or in which moved the different planets. Above the Earth was the sphere of air. Beyond the moon there was the aether, which is not air but a more subtle substance in which the planets move. And the order of the planets is given in that chart, and a reminder of how beyond all of this, beyond the realm of the fixed stars, was the Empyrean, wherein God was thought to dwell. So to gaze into the heavens is to look into the glory of God. And in this text, and indeed in the Latin and Greek philosophical traditions, there was occasionally a tendency to identify the heavens with the supreme God. When we are looking into the heavens, we're not only seeing a reflection of God, but in this rather more material vision, the heavens are in some sense identified with God. This is different from Plato, for whom the one is always beyond creation. Dropping down below the pictures of Saturn and Jupiter and Mars, he describes the meaning and the significance of these various planets. He reminds us, there's a picture of the Earth a little further down, that below the moon, this is just above chapter 18, there is nothing except what is mortal and doomed to decay, except the souls given to the human race by the bounty of the gods. So the realm of the Earth is the place where everything is subject to decay except the human soul. But above the moon is the eternal realm. So Scipio is beholding all of these glorious things, and now he sees, as in the next set of pictures, that all these spheres give off a tone and create a heavenly celestial harmony. There is a music being created by the universe itself, and there's a diagram in white and black next to the red depiction of the universe there, of medieval attempts to define what the tones of these various spheres would have been. The music of the spheres was thought to be real. The heaven is giving off this music. Well, why then don't we hear it? And he goes on and explains under the next set of pictures that our ears have become deaf because, as it were, we are hearing it all the time. The universe is filled with the celestial harmony, but we've become deaf to it. But it's possible to learn to hear it again. There's a kind of a musical analogy to Plato's idea of contemplation as we learn to behold beneath appearances the glory of God in creation, so also we can perceive with the spiritual ears of our innermost selves something of this eternal harmony. The metaphor not only of vision but of hearing is used to describe contemplation, a looking or a listening beyond the ordinary appearance of things. And the next set of pictures above number 19 are a reminder that the conclusion of all of this vision is twofold. Both that our ordinary earthly affairs, in comparison with heaven, are petty, and all of our grand concerns about imperial glory, which of course was occupying Rome in Cicero's day, and in Cicero's mind was occupying it far too much, these are petty concerns compared with the glories of heavenly reality, but we are obliged to serve the state. We are obliged to live a life of virtue, and virtue means that we must seek to better the world and the culture and the society in which we live. And indeed, that is what Cicero is attempting to do with this story, to remind people that it's not the glories of earthly empire, but real service to the state consists in being reminded of what true virtue is about. And not only in this life, but beyond this life. There are implications for living a virtuous life that reach beyond death itself. And so we'll stop here and continue in the next lecture with a similar description of spiritual ascent taken from the Jewish pseudepigrapha, the Jewish tradition of apocalyptic literature, the Ascension of Enoch.